This morning our speaker is Frank Ball. Frank teaches art at Oakland High School. He is also an accomplished artist and musician. Frank was previously chair of UUFM, and he currently serves as chair of the Social Justice Committee. Frank speaks on the topic, Improvisation as a Spiritual Practice. Let's welcome Frank.
Well, hi. Good morning, everybody. Thank you. It's good to be back up here. I haven't given a talk in a bit, and I wasn't planning on giving a talk today, but I'm happy to oblige. Jill asked me to fill in for her, and I'm happy to do that. I'm gonna be giving kind of a revision of a talk I did. It's like 3 or 4 years ago, so it's old enough to where even if you were here the first time, you probably forgot it by now. So, and if you weren't here, then it's all new to you. So I'm going to start off with a few quotes to kind of frame what I'm going to say. Here's one from Miles Davis. Don't play what's there, play what's not there. Here's one from John Cage. The idea of a mistake is beside the point. For once anything happens, it authentically is. Here's one from Pauline Oliveros. Listen to everything all the time and remind yourself when you are not listening. Here's one from jazz guitarist Joe Paz. If you hit a wrong note, then make it right by what you play afterwards. I like that. And here's one from another guitarist, Derek Bailey. And as regards methods, the improviser employs the oldest in music making. Mankind's first musical performance couldn't have been anything other than free improvisation. So today I have a privilege to speak with you about a topic that is very near and dear to me, improvisation. A while back, it's been a lot longer now, that second time around, I had an opportunity to lead a second hour about this, and we had some great points from that, so I thank everybody who was in that second hour 4 years ago. But I've also since had a chance to talk with several of you about this, because this is a passion of mine. So thank the people who helped me to teach me a little bit more about improvisation. So I want to talk to you a little bit about it, why it's important to my art-making life, and life as a whole for me. And if you'll humor me, I'll give you a little personal history of how this part of me has developed over the years, and I'll talk to you about some of the people that really inspired me. Then I want to shift the focus outwards and discuss how improvisation can be seen in a broader sense, not just for art making and music making, but can be seen as a spiritual practice that has lots of benefits. So I hope what I present today will somehow resonate with you, and you can get some beneficial information from my words. So what is improv or improvisation? Well, at its core, it's about being present in the moment and playing with the possibilities, which is why I wore my now shirt today to remind everyone. Okay. And we were all familiar with this as children. We made up games. We invented imaginary worlds, and we reveled in spontaneity. Now, as we humans grow, hopefully we learn valuable life skills like planning and studying and calculating, all vital skills for surviving and thriving as adults. But oftentimes, adults lose sight of their innate improvisation skills from childhood, unless we take extra effort to practice these skills. Exercising them like a muscle, they can atrophy and eventually fade into the background. So let me tell you a little bit about my own personal journey of improvisational discovery. As many of you know, I make art and music, and I cherish this as an integral part of my identity. One of the avenues that I've expressed myself in the past is through this improvisational music group that I had with a group of friends called Horsehair Everywhere. Now, Horsehair started around 12 years ago now, which is mind-blowing to me how fast time goes. And it was a group of friends and I decided to set up instruments in one of our apartments. It's actually the, got a lot of noise complaints about that. And designate a performance to take place without any prior practice or planning. And this is a basic mode of operation for what is commonly known as free improvisation or free jazz. So I don't think I'm claiming any sort of discovery here, and we knew that what we were doing wasn't some original groundbreaking idea, but we did it anyway. And the first time we did it, my friend was bowing away with his violin bow on something that wasn't a violin, because none of us actually played a violin, but he was bowing away on something, probably a cymbal or something, and he broke all the hair off his bow. So as you can imagine, I improvisationally exclaimed, "We have horse hair everywhere!" And we decided, hey, that's a good name for our group. So we repeated this process over and over again with the rotating cast of 10 or so people throughout the years. The group is not exactly still making music together, as all the members are living in different parts of the world, but each of the members are very active, including myself, in recording and playing music, and have garnered some attention in the underground press. There's a few Pitchfork reviews out there. I'll just, not to toot my own horn, but it all started in that apartment, though, with the horsehair everywhere. But anyway, when we first were playing so long ago, the results were not so great. We all struggled with letting go of learned systems of how music should work. And most of us came from like punk rock backgrounds or like various avenues of popular music. And so we weren't really accomplished jazz musicians and didn't have a really wide mode. So we were frustrated, a lot of frustrated rock guitarists in that phase. So there was a lot of like half-started songs, ego-driven jamming or shredding, if you will. Those of you who are, John knows what I'm talking about, yeah. But even in those early sessions, we would always have a moment or two when everything seemed to click, when the egos kind of died down. And usually it was late in the session after everyone was beginning to feel fatigue, trying to force things to work. Trying so hard to force things to work. Slowly, we would learn to be calm. And slowly we would learn to listen deeply. And slowly we would learn to play without letting our individual egos drive us. And these sessions begin to grow over the years and become completely leaderless. Well, that's interesting. When you got like 10 people in a room, it's kind of hard to do that. Collectively, we began to give room to the sounds that the other players were making, and we made room for silence as well. And that would become a vital player in our music. And we also like to make room for accidental discoveries, letting go of any sort of map or plan. Oftentimes it felt like we were unlearning our instruments in order to unlock their primordial essence as sound-making devices. I'm not going to say that the music was necessarily beautiful. I was into it. But in its own way, Horsehair Everywhere began to understand what improvisers, from Indian classical players to the skronkiest free jazz saxophonists, have known for years, namely that improvisation can be viewed as a spiritual practice. There is a kind of deep communication that happens between musicians in a fruitful improv collaboration, a wordless knowing that is born out of deep listening and mutual respect. I choose to describe it as a spiritual experience, though other words can be just as fitting. Say it's transportive, otherworldly, ecstatic, invigorating. Whatever one chooses to call it, this type of improvisation nurtured my being and helped me to grow and mature as an artist. Now, around this same time, I became involved with a group of visual arts students at MTSU who shared a mutual interest in the experimental fringes of the art world. So that's really my background. I'm not a trained musician. I'm a visual artist. So we studied things in this group like the Fluxus artists of the 1960s who constructed event scores. Those are fun. Those are little cards that they poetically describe an action to be carried out, kind of like a composer writing down the score for a piece of music. So that was an action. Or, even more out there, the controversial group known as the Vienna Actionists, who pushed the limits of the human psyche through bizarre rituals. And you want to see some weird stuff? Look them up on the internet. We somehow managed to form a group along with one of my personal heroes, MTSU professor at the time, Tom Thayer. The group was known simply as Improvisational Arts. And what Tom taught me, because Tom's now he's in New York teaching at City College, MTSU wouldn't give him tenure. Still mad about that. It broke my heart when he moved. What Tom taught me was how to present crazy out there, weird ideas in an academic sort of way as to get approval from the university. So I still treasure that knowledge. We became fascinated with this performance concept known as a beehive. And beehives, has anyone seen My Dinner with Andre, the art house movie from the 80s where it's just a conversation between two guys? If you haven't seen it, it's one of the most boring movies you could watch, but it's great at the same time. It's literally just two guys sitting down to dinner and having a conversation. Well, in that movie, one of them describes, they're both like from drama backgrounds, and he describes going on this excursion, and I can't remember where it was now, maybe South America, I could be totally wrong with that. And he's going through this bizarre ritual with these people where they enact his death and his rebirth. And he comes out of it like, oh, my God, this was like the most amazing drama experience he's ever had. And he's just like, whoa. So one of the concepts they describe in there is a beehive, in which to me it sounded like free jazz improvisation like we were doing with the Horsehair Group without the music. Okay, so let's try to imagine that. Without the music, improvising actions, performance art. So we managed to put on several performances. Again, this was an officially sanctioned MTSU club with bylaws, and it's great. It still tickles me to imagine. We put on several performances before the group fizzled out. If you don't mind, I'll humor you with a few descriptions. So our initial performance featured six people stationed outside the MTSU library on a lovely spring afternoon. I brought a bag of kazoos and some bananas. Other people brought a record player to play a recording of bird calls, a sculpture made of umbrellas, a large tube with which to speak through. We started with no real plan, and we began making sounds and chanting and moving around the space with an odd sort of intention. We would interact with whatever props or people were around. No one seemed to pay us much attention, but it felt like we had started something. I'd give it 3 out of 5 stars. Another performance I recall involved a group of 5 or so walking from the MTSU library in a sort of mock parade fashion. We put on face paint. We made some makeshift costumes. Some of us had instruments, and we probably were making some horrible noises with them. We eventually made our way off of campus, which was like, oh, man, in the real world now. Still in this parade formation down Ewing Street, to the unplanned end of our stop, which was the Murfreesboro Little Theater, where we went to the backyard of the theater and found there was a stage set up. Well, how wonderful. So we performed there a made-up ritual on their outdoor stage using dried leaves and sticks. I'd rate this one 4 out of 5 stars. On another occasion, Tom, our official MTSU sponsor, had the bright idea that we should stage a performance for a group that was coming to tour the art department one Saturday. It was some accreditation group, and I think Tom had some kind of sick pleasure in delighting people with, like, the most outside, bizarre things possible. So he was like, hey, let's stage a performance here. So one Saturday morning, we reserved one of the studio spaces in the Todd building and set it up early in the morning, which is a weird time to do this. I remember everyone just bringing bags of trash collected from thrift stores, old clothes, toys, instruments, sculptures, and even a large hunk of pizza dough. We must have carried on in that room for about 3 hours in a state of dizzying attention. And unfortunately, no one ever showed up to check it out. but I remember being completely drained and ecstatic and in a totally different headspace when it was all over. This one I'd rate 5 out of 5 stars. All right. So, some reflections now. Over the years, I've had a chance to ponder the mysteries and deeper truths of these experiences of group improvisation. I found that these states of deep awareness and group cohesiveness worked as a sort of fertilizer for my own personal artwork and music. Basically, I felt nurtured and fed by these experiences and could take the energy and use it as fuel for producing works of sound and visual art on my own. I also started to notice the inherent improvisation that is the nexus of all artwork. When a writer sets out to begin a new novel, what action takes place? Where do the ideas emerge from? When a composer begins to construct a new piece of music, what is the first step she takes? When seen in this way, it becomes obvious that improvisation is actually a skill that is at the heart of every creative endeavor. When one strengthens this skill, the positive implications can be astounding. But what about applications and uses of improvisation beyond the arts? I know not everybody is into that. Can this skill be useful for everyone? Well, I'd like to put forth the idea that improvisation is indeed a crucial skill to develop in nearly all aspects of life. It helps us discover the unique qualities in ourselves and to open up new possibilities that are far outside our conditioning. So let me reframe improvisation as a spiritual practice. And again, if that phrase doesn't work for you or it bothers you, then call it a practice for bettering yourselves or for better understanding yourself. So there's three qualities of improvisation I'd like to focus on here. There's mindfulness, playfulness, and embracing the unexpected. Mindfulness, playfulness, and embracing the unexpected. When these three qualities are refined and used well, they have the ability to elevate any improvisational collaboration to new exciting territories. And I think the same can be said for any other area of human experience as well. So let's start with mindfulness. In a sense, mindfulness is just paying close attention to the now. It is, in an improv setting, this means one is noticing deeply what is happening around them. This has the added effect of helping a person get some distance from their own thoughts. In the Horsehair Everywhere sessions, this was the most important lesson I learned. I had to listen deeply and respectfully to what the other players were doing. If I had something to contribute, I would make a sound. If not, I would wait and listen. I had respect for the greater thing that we were creating, and I knew that I was not the star here. Again, the quote from Pauline Oliveros, listen to everything all the time and remind yourself when you are not listening. This skill is easily applicable to interactions with people around you. Think of the art of a good conversation. I'm sure you've had conversations where you walked away thinking, wow, that was like a special moment there. One listens attentively to what is being said and then offers something in return when it feels right. You are not simply waiting to speak. You had that experience before in a conversation. Rather, you are creating this conversation together. And if both parties are engaged mindfully, it can be a beautiful thing. When one pauses to become more aware of what is around them, the right action is sometimes easier to discern. And sometimes this action can be no action at all. The next quality of improvisation I would like to address is playfulness. Now, a while back, it's been a little longer now, Carol Sue gave this great talk on the importance of play. Remember that? That was good. And I am indebted to her for opening up that topic in my own life. She also gave me a great book that I read, which is wonderful. Playfulness is a quality that we as adults often undervalue. We can see play as immature or pointless to engage in childlike play. Or we can structure our playtime so stringently that it becomes just another task to complete. But true, open, honest play is one of the most important qualities in good improvisation. It can also be an essential part of a healthy adult life. A playful spirit opens up an improvisation session. It lightens the mood and gives freedom as a gift to everyone present. It enlivens and energizes. Playfulness makes us explorers. We can discover new sounds, movements, and ideas without the weight of austerity pushing down on us. In our daily life, making time for goalless play, play without a goal, can serve to nurture our being and help us recover from moments of tension or stress. Play can take the shape of a casual walk with no particular destination in mind, or a doodle that is drawn on the margins of your notes. Whatever it is, I highly suggest that you give yourself space for play in your life. Value this part of yourself and give it room to grow. Now, I have a more recent anecdote to add to this now. So I had started a couple months ago trying to do some free improv stuff with Sarah Summer. Some of you guys know Sarah. Most of you probably do. Sarah, David, and Roland. So Sarah has like a really legit musical background in improvisation and composition. And like I said, I come from a visual art background, and the visual art people, when they approach music, we just like to think we can just do whatever we want, and it's just like, I don't care. That's how the Velvet Underground started. So I was like, yeah, whatever, I got this. But then when I sit down with somebody who actually has like some legit musical skill, it's really intimidating. So I knew Sarah was an improviser we talked about before. I knew like our headspace would click, but I was still really intimidated. So the playfulness thing helped a lot, because when we started, me playing guitar, playing violin, and a couple of the sessions, it would be like at first I'd be scared to like do something. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. So we'd play for a little bit, and then she would do some really funny things. Like, she'd be playing the violin, and then instead of playing it anymore, she would just kind of like brush it or hit it. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, okay, I can do that. So then I start like hitting my guitar, and then like it freed us up. And then we could come back and start playing notes again or whatever. But the playfulness of you know, engaging a familiar instrument or object in an unexpected way was like really freeing to me. It took away some of that weight of like, oh crap, this person knows what they're doing. I better not mess up. Okay, the next quality I want to focus on in improvisation is embracing the unexpected. Oh. So let's return to that John Cage quote again from the beginning of my talk. The idea of a mistake is beside the point. For once anything happens, it authentically is. When working in an improvisational setting, it can often feel too tense, especially at the beginning. No one wants to make a mistake and destroy the potentially beautiful thing that is being created. The problem with thinking, with this kind of thinking, is that it often holds down the performers in modes and mind states that are predictable, and thus keeps them from truly experiencing the realm of possibilities that is available. This is talking with Sarah. She said she would be playing with people, and it's like, you got to try some new things. We can't just have like 30 filled glasses in the same room. Okay, we got to do. They get stuck in their arpeggios. Filled glass joke. Come on, no, it doesn't land. Blake gets it. Okay, so I like filled glass. I'm just okay. Unexpected things or accidents can actually be a saving grace. In an improvisational setting, it all an accident truly is something that the mind did not see coming. So, a while back, I was watching a pretty straightforward jazz band play at a coffee shop. They're actually really good. I was really enjoying it. They're doing a great job playing some jazz standards with some flourishes here and there. It was excellent. Then the barista behind the counter created an unexpectedly loud noise by banging out some espresso grounds into the trash. You guys know that? Like, doing that with metal, though. Without missing a beat, the drummer picked up on that little rhythmic motif and began working it into what he was already playing. So it was awesome. So he's playing this jazz beat, and all of a sudden, so he's like, I mean, he just like, it was awesome. So all of a sudden, it was like a brilliant little display of embracing the accidental, and it transformed this relatively straightforward jazz tune into something to me, which was new and exciting. It was actively engaged with the possibilities around it as I hit the mic to engage the audience first. That was all intentional. I would imagine that most people here have had moments when they realized the value of embracing the unexpected. Maybe it was on a road trip when you took a wrong turn and you just decided to go with it. Or perhaps it was discovering some hidden treasure of a town along the way that you thought you knew but you didn't go the right way. Or perhaps it was this crazy job offer that seemed to be completely out of left field. Like, I don't know what. Okay. Whatever it is, there's often value in embracing the unexpected, as it can lead us to understandings that are outside of our normal angle of view, our normal tried and true paths. Obviously, this can sometimes go awry, and I would certainly recommend exercising some caution when jumping into something new. We are adults, so we... goes without saying. Nevertheless, if we only follow predictable patterns that are comfortable to us, we will never have the opportunity to experience the full color of life. So you got to go out there and open yourself to the unexpected. Here's another quote here from an improvisation teacher, composer, and author, T. Carl Whitmer. An error may be only an unintentional rightness. Do not get too fussy about how every part of the thing sounds. Go ahead. All processes are at first awkward and clumsy and funny. Do not be afraid of being wrong. Just be afraid of being uninteresting. So, after spending a little time looking at improvisation, I hope you have come to some kind of understanding of this art form. I claim no authority on the subject matter, and I know my experiences with improv are only a small portion of what is possible. If you have an interest in the arts, I would encourage you to think more about the role improvisation plays in your work. Any kind of work, too. Perhaps you can begin to see the moments of infinite possibility that bubble up to the surface when a project is just beginning. When we pay attention to how we create, we can nurture that part of us that makes us better improvisers. Even if the arts are not your calling, I hope you take what I've said and it's given you some chance to think about the role that improvisation might play in your life. Mindful awareness, a playful spirit, and the ability to embrace the unexpected are all life skills that we can develop as we improvise our way through our lives. Because after all, when it's all said and done, aren't we really all just making it up as we go along? Thanks.